used to think I was a legend. Turns out I was a liability. This is AFIT Podcast, where we discuss addiction war stories. You're fucking laughing again. And tales of recovery.
Sorry.
Against the odds. My name's Megara Fury. I'm an alcoholic dominatrix, and I've been off it for... Why did I say off it there instead of AFIT?
I don't like
I've been
change.
AFIT for over a year. I know. Freaking out. This is the worst introduction I've ever done. And my drunken hobbies included ruining not one, not two, but three Christmases. 1 year, I had enough for wine and I had enough for cat food, but I didn't have enough for presents for anyone. So, so I sat in my house depressed, crying into my own cats.
Oh my God. Cat napkins.
Yes. It was awful.
I'm Dana. I'm an alcoholic fashion stylist and I'm 10 months AFIT. My drunken hobbies included drinking multiple bottles of Prosecco and admiring my collection of 112 Monster High dolls. And today we are joined by...
I'm Scott. I'm 7.5 years AFIT. One night I was drunk and kicked out my own band. Went and got more drunk. I got chips, curry sauce and rice. I went home to my flat. I spewed all over the whole floor and passed out naked with ABBA on repeat. And I had a flat inspection the next morning and the guy came in, took photos of me and saved to say I got kicked out of my flat.
So, what?
I don't want to say homeless because like I wasn't like lying about the streets and stuff, but I'd stayed on my pal's couch for like a month.
Technically,
I wasn't having any stay because I got kicked out of my flat because it was that disgusting.
Holy shit!
Oh my God!
Get out now! I was like, okay, I can't.
That's
really
amazing.
I can't really argue.
I like the chips and curry element.
Yeah,
I'm here for the ABBA.
I reheated a korma in a blackout, and I woke up the next day with my knee in it, like in my bed.
Yeah.
So the plate for the korma was on my right hand side, and the actual korma was on the left hand side. I ruined my mattress and everything because it was honking a curry. And the only reason I woke up was because I rolled over and sploshed my knee into it. And I was like, that's cold. What is that? It woke me up, and I was like, I must have reheated a korma in a blackout last night. Couldn't remember it.
I always used to wake up with cold doner meat by my bed and still be that pissed and just eat it.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
It's quite disgusting, really. Considering I'm a personal trainer. That's quite awful, but it's true.
Oh, that's funny.
And McMuffins, sausage and egg McMuffins from McDonald's. They used to get bought knowing that I wasn't going to be able to eat it, but to eat it cold when I woke up, half a cup.
Oh, and so McDonald's
drunk
food.
Drunk you as a feeder.
Yeah. I used to be really overweight, so that's maybe why.
I woke up in the dungeon bath one day. I've got a bath in my dungeon.
Oh, you've got a dungeon.
Okay. So I woke up in the bath one day covered in McDonald's wrappers, and I don't remember falling asleep in the bath. There was a girl lying on the... I've got this hospital bed thing. So she was lying on that, covered in vomit and pish. None of us remember what happened the night before.
At least somebody doesn't remember.
Like, I know. I'm
if there's
so
not
bad.
If there's not a single person to remember, all is kind of forgiven.
That was my rationale. Yeah,
that
was like one thing that always was really bad for me is that I always blacked out. Like, always because I drank so much, obviously, but I just like rarely remember like getting home and stuff like that.
For all the years I drank. I've woke up mid taxi journey, like, what am I doing? Yeah. Where am I? I don't even know where I'm going. And like, I've been just lying there snoring. So you hear about people getting raped in the back of Ubers and stuff. I'm lucky.
Well, I woke up one morning with, couldn't remember getting home. I had a black eye and I didn't have a phone. So somebody's probably battered me, stole my phone. Generally couldn't remember what happened.
Holy shit.
Can't remember.
You were talking about food earlier. Like, did you have a drunken snack? What was your drunken go-to food?
I did get the classic doner meat and chips for kebab shops, garlic mayo, and I would never eat that now, and I haven't ate it since I stopped boozing, but I used to get it all the time.
What were you, Dana?
I would just take anything, like, see the dirtier it was, the more I wanted it. Like, there's still jokes going around today about how much of a pig I am when I eat steaming. Like, I ate a whole burrito, like, just in two fucking bites, like, and everything. Like, I've got no class. Like, I think it's because I don't really eat that much when I'm sober. Like, when I was steaming, I would just shovels. My hands are shovels. My face.
I never used to eat when I was drinking. But as soon as like the drinking part, like the club or whatever was done, I would just want to eat everything, like Blue Lagoons and shit, you know?
Yeah.
And McDonald's.
For sure.
So
I used
much.
To, mine was pizza crunch and chips, cheese and gravy. I had to have both. And I would eat the fucking lot of it. And
it's awful.
You know, I jumped up to, I'm normally a bit, an 8.5, 9 stone kind of person. Maybe about 9.5 if I'm training a lot. But I was like 11 stone at one point and I was just so unhappy. Mm. Like my belly was hanging out my trousers and all that. And it's just not me. It's just so fucking unhealthy. But I remember one night trying to get pizza crunch just anywhere I could get one. Couldn't get one. Ended up in this like Turkish kebab shop thing. And they had like a chip shop area. So I went in and I was like, can I have a pizza crunch? And he's like, I don't do pizza crunch. I said, well, do you do pizzas? And he's like, yeah. I went, do you batter things? And he's like, uh-huh. I went, well, can you just batter a pizza and give me a pizza crunch then? And like, I was so rude about it. And he was like, no. And he was starting to argue back with me and his manager came out and he was like, you could see that he was like, drunk logic is logic. And he's like, yeah, we can do your pizza crunch. So I ended up having this like, oven baked pizza, like proper fucking rolled out the dough and all that, put it in the oven, made the pizza, and then I got him to take it out of the oven, half it, batter it, and fucking fry it.
Amazing.
It would have been better just as a pizza.
I've done the exact same thing. Like when I was about 16, I used to go out in Blantyre and drink, mm-hmm. and one of the nights, and everybody that knows me from Blantyre remembers me by this one thing, and I'm really nice to customer service people. Like, just as a thing, I think you can tell a lot about a person by the way they treat customer service and, like, people that work. And so I went in, and my thing at the time was fritter rolls. Like, all I ever wanted in life was a fritter roll. So I went in, and I was like, can I have a fritter roll, please? And she's like, we don't have any. And I was like, yes, you fucking do. And I actually argued with this lassie and, like, tried to start a fight with her because she wouldn't give me a fritter roll. And sometimes that keeps me up at night still.
No wonder.
Because she was just doing her job, man. I was just being a 16-year-old arsehole. But anyway,
yeah.
What about your life when you were, you know, 16 or whatever, before? Tell us about before the booze.
Yeah, so, but, like, when I was younger, I was, like, so active and sporty. I just wanted to be a footballer, and I was dead skinny. I never really, like, didn't like food that much. Like, I would obviously eat my dinners and that, but I was never, like, gave me sweeties and blah, blah, blah. I just was football daft and done like running at school and stuff like that. So as I was growing up, like my goals was to be a professional footballer or a PE teacher. So I was never really got into like all like booze until I was a wee bit older. Like I think people were maybe boozing school at like 14, 15, but I didn't have my first drink till I was 16. And then that was it. I was just addicted to it basically. The moment I started drinking, I just knew that it wasn't normal. But and then the football pretty much stopped right away because obviously football was on a Saturday morning, but the drinking was happening at the weekends at first. So I stopped playing football. I stopped exercising at all. Stopped going to school. And then, yeah, I left school so I could get pushed and play my band, basically. And I pushed trolleys and Morrison's to make money. This was like 16, 17. All my friends were still at school, but a couple of friends I'd made through boozing up the town at gigs and that. And I just spent my time getting pushed, going to work and playing in my band. And then I got to 18. And decided that I couldn't really keep doing this at home because my mum was obviously getting on at me when I was like a fucking riot in the house and, you know, not coming home. I got arrested one night and the police, I remember, I got away with it because I just said I stayed at my mum's house, my pal's house, but they sent a letter to the house and my mum opened it and she fucking... was like, what the fuck? And I was like, it was literally like fighting with my mate over a litre of cider on Buchanan Street. And like, I flung him into a bin or something. And the police saw me, obviously, and like jumped on me and was like, you're getting done for assault. But they didn't know we were pals. but they still arrested me and took me into a cell and stuff like that. And I got out at like 4 and they left, they fucking chucked me out like 4 in the morning in the middle of town, and I stayed in Dumbarton. I was like, how am I even, like, this was like, I was like 17 I think, so that was 16 years ago, so there was no Ubers and smartphones and stuff, so I was like, what the fuck am I going to do? So I went to a payphone, phoned my girlfriend, or kind of girlfriend at the time, and I went to hers in Rutherglen, stayed at hers and went to work, straight to work, and I thought I got away with it, but no, I got a letter, so my mum obviously knew at that point I was getting up to fucking shit. And as soon as I turned 18, I moved out into a flat in the west end of Glasgow with my pal, and then that's just when it started getting really bad.
What was, you said, you know, like a brief sort of history of your drinking career, like what was your first drink you ever had?
Cider in the park.
How did you feel amazing. When you had it?
So good.
What was the difference between sober you and drunk you? Like, tell us a bit about that.
I guess I was, like, quite shy. Still am. I'm quite a shy, quiet person socially and stuff. Now, because I'm sober now.
Mm-hmm.
But when I had a drink, I just felt class, you know, I felt like,
yeah.
I felt amazing, I felt like I could talk to girls and that, I felt like I was funny, I just had, like, confidence that I never had before, and it was at a stage where, like, I was playing in a band, and, like, my hobbies was playing gigs and going to gigs, so, like, drinking.
Surrounded by alcohol.
Aye, of course, aye, and, you know, drinking bottles of Frosty Jacks down the Clyde before you went into the gig and stuff, and you know, the euphoria in the gig when I was wrecked was like way better than ever standing at a gig sober and
yeah.
going back to parties and stuff like that. It was just like at that age was just so much fun, and I was just addicted to like be mental basically, and so I just got to a stage where quite quickly that it was out of control, and I essentially knew from a pretty young age that it was a problem.
My first drink, I drank it alcoholically. Like, we and two pals, we were just the absolute misfits from school, and like I had big bushy black curly hair and I had the biggest eyebrows, a moustache and big sticky ears, and I was just a mess. Like, boys were not an option for me at school whatsoever, and I was just very like self-conscious. I tried to cut a fringe and I fucked it. Fringes don't work in curly hair either. As soon as the like the least bit of water or condensation in the air, so I just had this like fucking, it was like a muff at the front of my head. It was horrible. Amazing. So I was just a mess, and I didn't fit in anywhere. So this other lassie, screaming ginger hair, another lassie who'd been through quite a lot of stuff, and she had a lot of things going on at home and that, but the stress of that had caused her to go bald underneath her ponytail, like, so she had bald patches. So there's us three just talking to each other and hanging about, and it was just, I don't know, we were just chatting to each other. Dan is dying.
I don't know what you were doing there if you were crying or something.
You've done this to me again.
I know.
I knew it was coming.
So we were just accidents looking for somewhere to happen. We wanted that escape, and our friends were, the three of us were like, what we do, we'll get a drink tonight. And we ended up standing at a street corner and asking a guy to go in, so we went in for his as long as we bought him a fish supper. So we bought him the fish supper, we went into the shop, we had £3, so that was three bottles of Pulse cider. And back to my house, I was supposed to be looking after my sister. My mum was doing night shift, trying to make ends meet to try and put food on the table. Shameful what I'd done, but we drank the full litre of cider, and I didn't just have a sip and sip it because it was disgusting. I wanted the whole bottle down my neck as fast as I could. We're doing spinnies in my living room, my first drink, and I was tiny. I wasn't built for any of that, and I've got one kidney as well, so processing alcohol's a difficulty for me to start with. But I was fucking wrecked. And for that first 10-15 minutes while it was starting to come up on me, I felt amazing. All of a sudden I can talk, and I've got confidence, and I'm funny. I think I'm funny. And we are, you know, everything that we ever wanted to say each other came out in about 10 minutes. and then were chatting the window and trying to get boys into the house that were walking past, which, you know, I'd never said boo to a boy in my life. I remember this boy, Jamie, had, and I still think about this because I'm still harbouring a resentment, fuck you, Jamie, he'd decided to tell somebody to come and tell me that I had to go and meet him because he wanted to nip me or something behind the school. And he was like one of the good looking boys. And I turned up because I was an idiot. And I turned up and like half the school was there just laughing. And I was just, and he was like, do you think I'd fucking nip you? And I was just like, oh my God. So I went from that, like,
fuck
really...
Fuck Jamie. Fuck him.
Jamie's now bald and fat. Fuck you, Jamie. I'm gonna blow up. So that happened. And then I remember chapping the window, boys try to get boys in. Boys arrived at the door and I realised that boys look smaller when they're further away. These were not little boys. Like, it was big guys for school, like, you know, 5 years, 6 years, because we were only like 13, 14 when we were drinking, 12, 13 when we were drinking. And so these were like 17, 18 year olds. And I was like, this is a bad idea. Like, we can't let them in the house now. And I shot at it. So in my panic, I punched one of the boys in the face, tried to take him a square go outside in my street. And he decked me. And when he decked me, everything just fucking hit me. And I ended up crawling back into my house, spewing everywhere. Like, just like you get found in your flat. That's what my mum came in to me after night shift. I was a mess. And she's like, have you been drinking? I mean, the house is stinking of, like, booze-flavoured vomit. And my mum's like, have you been drinking? And immediately I was like, no. So I've just lied to my mum right off the bat without even thinking about it. Because it changes you, doesn't it, booze? It just turns you into a liar.
Selfish, you know? Mm-hmm. I was very selfish. Like, I used to drink every night up in my bedroom after work. And I cut a hole in the bottom of my bed. I had one of these hollow beds. Cut a hole and I just shoved the empty bottle under the bed. And then one day my mum was fucking up my room. I don't know what she was looking for, but she found this fucking stash of like empty 3 litre Frosty Jacks. Must have been about 20 bottles in there or something.
Oh my gosh.
And she was just like, what the fuck are you doing? I was like...
So did she try and talk to you about it or...?
Not really. Like, I just was always... dead quick to get out of those situations, you know, and probably quite just hanging it off as if like, oh, I'm just fucking young, having fun with my mates or whatever, but really I'm in my bedroom drinking cider in my lane when I'm 17 years old, do you know what I mean? It's not normal.
Nah.
You said that it escalated, you know, when you were about 18, that it got worse pretty quickly.
Yeah.
How did you get worse? What was the progression like for you? What did that look like?
Well, I turned 18 July, and then I moved out in like September. So that was me. I was out. I was living with my two mates, Kelvin Grove Park. So it's like 10-minute walk through Surrey Hall Street. I was still working. I got transferred to Morrison's in Partick. So I was, you know, it was like when you're that age, you could get fucked up and still get up in the morning and go to work. I couldn't do it now, I don't think, but then you could, and I could, or I'd be fucking late most days, but I'd still go to work. And so I was able to, like, I just wanted to be fucked all the time. Like, I just didn't feel good when I wasn't drinking. And at that age, 18, 19, I was like working in the supermarket. I was going to the pub for my lunch for pints, and then because I couldn't wait till the end of my shift, and then I'd walk home, partake for a half hour walk but up to my flat, and I would go home via like 5 pubs, just like pop in for another pint, and then I'd go get more beers for the off license at my flat, and then sit in the house or go back out to the pub later, go to a gig and drink through the gig and go to a club, and then go home and get 4 hours sleep and get up and go to work. And I could do it. I was physically able to like get up and go to work, so I kept doing it. And it was just a lot of drinking. And I'm very, very lucky to have kept that job, because obviously having to pay rent and bills, if I'd lost my job I would have been fucked and I would have had to move back home. But I was late a lot. I wouldn't turn up for shifts. I would turn up drunk. So I was quite lucky to keep that job and all the jobs I've been in or was in when I was drinking. But I was quite lucky in the sense that people always kind of got on with me very well and liked me. So they would let me off with things, or get, you know, they would go easy on me, or and people would cover for me. Which, looking back, obviously, feel bad about, because I was using that to my advantage, because I knew I could maybe get away with it. So I'd be like, all right, okay, it's fucking midnight and I'm drunk, I should probably go to bed, because I'm up at 6 a.m. to go to work, but I'll just keep drinking, because if I'm late, it'll probably be all right.
Yeah.
And that didn't help. And I was like, thinking of living in that flat, I was working a supermarket. I would always go to the off license bit before I would finish work, and like buy vodka and rum and stuff. And I just have like pints of fucking coke and vodka or coke and rum with my dinner and that. You know, it's like
been there.
But again, I'm 18, 19 in that flat, and I'm thinking, well, everybody drinks. All my pals drink, so
it seems excusable.
Just young, you know.
When you're younger, yeah. I always thought that, and I still think that sometimes. It's like, oh, you're too young to really have an issue. Everybody's getting wasted, except I was always the last one awake.
Yeah.
Nobody else was getting wasted when I was still getting wasted. Yeah. So
my issue was as well, if I was off work the next day, and I would wake up for a heavy night, I would really want to drink as soon as I woke up. All my mates were like, fuck off, you serious? Like, going to the pub? Like, I'm fucked, I'm going to get food or whatever. And I'd be like, no, I'm going to Wetherspoons, because Wetherspoons was that pub that would serve you in the morning. Or I'd have booze in the flat, and I would always want to keep going. I'd always want to drink the next day as soon as I got up. Whereas all my mates didn't want to do that, and that was where I was kind of like, nah, maybe I'm worse. But I had a couple of friends who would also do that, so I'd be like, oh, well, they're doing it as well, and kind of, again, tell myself it was okay. But during that flat, I got arrested another two times. So I'd been in jail overnight. It's nothing crazy, nothing. I don't have a criminal record. I'd never went to court, anything like that. I was just drunk, found like passed out on the street, unable to, you know, on the road and stuff. Mm. So people phone the police and they would come and throw me in a cell overnight, and I'd wake up in a fucking jail cell, you know, and then they'd just fucking pat me out. so that happened another couple of times, and again, you start thinking to yourself, this isn't normal, but yeah, I knew it was a problem, but I just didn't admit it.
Was there any kind of like significant sort of rock bottom for you? I mean, I know you mentioned your flat and ABBA and stuff like that, but was there any
that
other...
That was bad. Like, I was so embarrassed by that, but, you know, you tell your mates and they're like, oh, fuck, that's so funny. And I was like, ah, isn't it? But really, it's quite embarrassing, you know?
Yeah.
But when I got my next flat, after that, I moved in with another friend, and it was another great location. It was like, round the back of Sucky Hall Street, essentially. So, again, it was like... pubs, clubs, so accessible, off license, 2 minutes for the house. So the next few years of that flat were really bad as well. I ended up getting another overnight, and when I was in that flat, so that was four overnights by the time I'm 21. Rock bottoms, like, yeah, quite a lot, to be fair. The getting arrested is pretty bad, you know, when you wake up in the morning and realise where you are, even though it wasn't, as I say, it was never anything serious, still really bad to end up in that, like, being that bad that you're, you know, incapable of getting home and putting myself at real danger. You know, that's why they took me into the cell, because I could have got run over by a motor, or somebody could have battered me, murdered me, killed me, raped me, whatever. So they were pretty bad. I then later worked in a call centre, which was like shift work, so that was really bad for my boozing, because it was 3 days working, 3 days off.
Yeah.
So I'd have 3 days off or just benders, and the 3 days on, maybe a 12 o'clock start, so I could go to the pub after work knowing I wasn't having to get up till 11 a.m. the next day.
Yeah.
So that was quite bad, and that was I got to a really bad stage at that point. On the late shifts when there was no managers in, I was putting like Mad Dog in a Fanta bottle and stuff like that. going to the pub.
I'd done that at school.
Nice.
Art class.
Aye. I mean, it's, you get away with it, you know. Looking back,
sorry,
people must
Mr.
have smelled it, you know. But that was getting pretty bad at that stage. I maxed out a credit card one weekend on booze, strippers and casino, and that was pretty bad. That was a lot of money. I stopped drinking at that point. That was a year before I stopped then for 5 weeks, because I was like, this is fucked up. I was like so mentally fucked at this point.
Yeah.
I was like depressed as fuck.
So did that help, like, you know, the sort of real life consequence of racking up a huge amount of debt in one weekend? Yeah. That kind of drive you towards the right, like, it's not just a hangover, I'm gonna have to fucking pay this off.
Well, of course. I mean, at that point I'm like, okay, that's fucked up, I'm gonna have to pay that off, and that's gonna take me ages. Physically I'm a mess. I hated myself. I was like 17 stone. I couldn't, like, you know, talk to a girl. I didn't have a girlfriend for like 6-7 years. I hated my job, so I hated going to work every day. I hated being sober, but getting drunk was like fucking up my life, so I was like, where'd I go for here?
Mm-hmm.
So that weekend was when I got home and realised the damage that I'd done that weekend. I was like, this has to fucking stop, man. Like, because I was like, you know, I didn't want to fucking be here anymore after. I was like, what has my life came to? Do you know what I mean? My sister was a school teacher. My family were all, you know, good, decent people, and I was just this fucking write-off, you know. I was letting everybody down, and I stopped. It lasted 5 weeks, but my birthday came, and I was like, it's my birthday, I'll booze, and then I'll get off it again. But as soon as this booze touched my lips on that first night back, I was... Oh man, I don't even remember, like, that night, and then that was it. It went on again, and that was then getting worse, because I'd been off it for 5 weeks and I went back on it. It was even worse, because I was like, oh well, fuck it, I'm on it again. And I was kind of going like a really bad downward spiral. And throughout all this, so I worked in the bank at this point. It was quite a professional job, and I only got that job because my dad was quite high up in the bank, and he basically done me a favour by getting me a job in the bank. I didn't really have the qualifications for it, to be honest, but he done me a favour by helping me out, because he knew I needed to make more money, because I was skint, and God, I was spending all my money on fucking getting out and getting fucking wasted. But so he done me that favour, and I told myself when I joined the bank, I was like, right, I need screwing up, because this is serious shit, you know. And my dad is like, you know, he's got a reputation, so I can't fuck about, but I did fuck about, and there was a lot of times I didn't make it in, and he would get told, and then he would need to cover for me, or, like, he'd be, like, getting on at me, and I let him down quite a lot in that sense. But we were, like, best pals as well, because we went to the football with each other, and we did hang out as mates, and we'd go to the pub and get pished, and... But I would then do that, like, that stuff, like, we work, and then he would find out, and he would get pissed off, and I'd let him down some other way, or get drunk at family Christmases. And I'm really ashamed to say this, but I actually I tried to, like, fight him in his own house one night, and I was that pissed, and I think he just fucking told me to go to bed or something, and I was like that wasted. I was like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? And like, in his own house, I'm like trying to scrap him. And that was a major, waking up the next day and realising what I'd done there. I was like, oh fuck, like, that was so mentally bad. For I was like in a really bad place. He didn't speak to me for months, because I was too much of a shite bag to apologise as well. So that was a kind of ongoing cycle of best mates, he won't speak to me, I feel like a prick, but I'll just drink more to kind of forget about it, because that was just my way of dealing with things. So that was like a major thing with me wanting to stop, because I was like, I wanted to be a better person and work. I wanted to stop letting them down. So it came like it came to a bank holiday weekend, and I was drinking. I feel like the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. To the Monday, and I was meant to go to football with my dad on the Saturday. Then he wake up. So I was drinking the whole weekend. No, sorry, this is the wrong weekend. I'm thinking.
It's okay.
Go back because that was the last weekend I ever drank. So
right.
I'm going back a few months before that. It was a Wednesday. It was a really bad day in work. So I was like, as soon as I leave here, I'm getting on it. Knowing I was going back into work the next day, but I was going to a gig that night. So I went home, I drank loads, went to the gig, drank more, ended up going to a club. 4 a.m. effort on a Wednesday night. Got home, cracked open another bottle of Jack Daniels, me and my mate, and I was meant to be getting up at 7 for work to go and start in the bank at 9. Well, I passed out about, I don't know, 6 a.m. or something, and I woke up and it was 12 in the afternoon, and my dad was at my front door.
Oh my gosh.
Like, because no one wasn't answering my phone. I was, the people in the work didn't know where I was.
Mm-hmm.
So they phoned him and was like, look, your son's not turned up again. He won't answer his phone. Just, we're worried about him.
Mm-hmm.
So he came round to my flat, got in, and woke me up. And he was like, I was like on my bedroom floor, like in my clothes, you know, and he was like, what the fuck is going on? And I was like, I'm sick of lying about this. I'm sick of like covering it up. Because I was always like, oh, you know, it was somebody's birthday and it just got out of hand, or, you know, I'm stressed or blah, blah, blah. I was sick of the lies, man. I was sick of hiding away from it.
Yeah.
And I just, that day, I just said, I was like, I've got a serious issue now with this. I want help, and that was the first time I kind of asked for help in work, and I'd been dealing with kind of like phone counsels and stuff like that, but I didn't really feel that was helping, and so the drinking kept going. But when I admitted it to my dad, that was a big weight off my shoulders, because I was always so worried about what he would think if I admitted it, if I was ashamed of who I was and how I was acting and how I was living my life. And I was really worried of the reaction of admitting it, and then, but when I did, all he wanted to do was help me, you know. And
that's good.
He took me in to his house and was like, stay here for a wee bit and, you know, get yourself better, and then we can work through this. That was in December that year of 2011. I ended up getting back on it a couple of weeks after that. And then it got bad again through to the May the next year, and that was that weekend I was talking about, drinking on the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the Monday, and then I was back in work on the Tuesday. And throughout that weekend, I'd like fucked up things with my girlfriend at the time, fell out with mates, spent too much money again. I was in work, like, thinking, felt probably the lowest I'd ever felt, even worse than the time I'd spent all that money on my credit card, because it was like, again, it happened again. I was doing all this. I felt so bad. And I just told myself that day, I was like, I've had enough, and I need to change. I want to change.
Yeah.
I want to stop this. And
wanting to, that's the difference, isn't it?
Oh, aye.
Actually wanting to.
Yeah, totally.
Because you can white knuckle it. Like, I lasted 6 weeks on a white knuckle. Every thought was dominated by the idea of drink.
Yeah.
I couldn't, and I hated everybody around me for, I hated being told no. Like, see when friends didn't want to do something. I can't describe the feeling it gave me. I wasn't annoyed at them. Like, obviously they didn't want to drink at 6 a.m, like, I get it. But something just, I don't know if it was resentment, but it made me feel uncomfortable. And I think it's because in the back of my mind I knew that something was wrong. So, but I never wanted to not do that. That's how I wanted to live my life.
Yeah, of course.
I've even said out loud, I would rather die than not drink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah, of course.
I remember...
You have to want it.
I used to go clubbing all the time, and it was just constantly... I worked in trash, so I was hanging about with that whole crowd, and there was loads of eckies and things flying about, and I remember meeting one of the boys that worked in there. I just met him out when I was out clubbing, and he was there with his friends, and he was a kind of quiet guy. And he said, oh, we're all going back to my house. And I'm thinking, because he'd a wee bit of money and stuff, and I thought, it's going to be some party. This is going to be amazing. Went back to his house and his pals were just sitting chatting, just normal, in this really nice living room. And they were just making cups of tea and I was just sitting there like that. I fucking came all the way out to Newton Mearns for this. And I was just sitting looking at them going, fucking weirdos. I'm the one that's trying to get the absinthe out of his dad's cupboard. Like, when I don't need any more to drink and I don't need anything else. And I thought they were the weirdos.
Yeah, of course.
It's just, you just believe your own bullshit.
Yeah, of course. It's kind of similar to what you're saying there. When my mates didn't want to drink the next morning, I was like, it's fucking wrong with you. What do you want to drink for? Like,
weirdos.
Aye, like, why? You know, I was like, it's fucking great. Come on, let's do it. But they didn't want to, and I was, you know, they were the weirdos to me, and I wasn't, you know. So, yeah, I actually wanted to stop at that point. Like, I was, basically, it was stop, or I knew I was going to end up a fucking goner, basically. So that was May the 7th, 2012. And then I managed to stay off it. I got counselling. Well, I kind of arranged to get counselling. I hadn't started yet. But my dad was really helping me with stuff, and the people in the work that I'd kind of opened up to were all supportive. They were not like encouraging me to like go and drink nights out and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I really helped my friends for once. They were really helpful, because before when I tried to stop, it was always, oh, come on, just have a fucking drink.
You can have one pint.
They didn't understand, they didn't get it. You know, they just thought I was being dramatic or whatever. But, you know, that was really hard at times before. But I was off it, and then July 28th, so like 2.5 months later, my dad went out to play golf and dropped dead on the golf course. So yeah, that happened. No warning, he wasn't ill. He just went out to play golf and fucking never came home, man, you know. So that day was a major turning point in my life, because I was only 2.5 months fit, and I was still quite vulnerable. Like, I knew I wanted to drink, but I knew I didn't want to, if that makes sense. I wanted to drink, but I knew I didn't want to get back to where I was, and I knew I couldn't control it. So I was like, I'm staying off it. And so it was a Saturday that it happened, and I was playing FIFA with my flatmate in the flat, and my other best mate was round. And it was Saturday afternoon, and I got a phone call. It was my sister. I looked at my phone, and I was like, "Why the fuck's my sister phone? We don't really talk that much." And like, but so I kind of thought, it's a bit weird. So I phoned it, and she was like crying, and I was like, "What's up?" She was like, "Dad went out to play golf. He just had a heart attack, and he's died." And I was like, "What?" Like, you know, obviously that when you get told that, I was like growing about the four, fucking uncontrollably crying and shouting and stuff. I just couldn't process it. But the first thing I said to my mate when I'd kind of stood up and got gathered myself, I was like, I'm going to the shop to get booze, mate, because I can't deal with this. And he would, to be fair, like, I wouldn't expect him to know what to say in that situation. He was like, mate, just do what you've got to do. Like, and I went to go to Tesco. It was right across from my flat, and I just had a moment where I was like, my wee sister was 12 years old at the time. And I thought about her, and I thought about my dad, about how proud he was that I had stopped for those 2 months, because like, he would be like, it was my birthday. Last time I saw my dad was when we were out for my birthday, and he was like, it's your birthday, you're going to have a pint. And I was like, no, I'm not. And he was like so proud of me, I could see that. And I remembered that, and that was it. I just said to myself, I was like, this is it. This is where you have to take responsibility for once in your life, and you have to do the right thing instead of just choosing the fucking easy way out all the time.
It's like crossroads, isn't it?
It is, and luckily I never went and got anything, and I went over to my sisters, and you know, spent and was with them, and I never drank, and I haven't ever since.
Made the difference for your sister as well, being able to be there for her.
Of course, aye. Like, she just lost her dad, and I'm the male figure there, and you know, I couldn't be drunk. I'd be a liability. I wouldn't be there. You know, I would just be in my own selfish fucking way. You know, and I took time off work grieving. If I was boozing through that, I would have ended up fucked. To be honest, I don't know if I would have came back for it. And so that's kind of that's why things are a bit different for me. When people say like, how how did you get help, or people talk about meetings and stuff like that. But for me, the whole thing, the rest for every day since that happened and going for the rest of my life is you need to not let him down, you know? And that's what's made me such a strong person to not do it. And through that, I was like, I found the gym because I was like, I was struggling, obviously, you know, it wasn't fucking easy. And every day I was
plus when you put the booze down, you feel everything, like emotions are 10 times more intense. So going through something like that, I can't even imagine.
You know, I just turned 25, and you know, I was off work, so I was like, fucking hell, I need to do something with my time because I'm just thinking all the time. So I joined the gym and I battered it, and I found something that made me feel like amazing, but wasn't fucking drink for the first time in my life. And I was like, oh, fuck, this is awesome. And I just got addicted to that, and I just found fitness, and it saved my life, I think, because ever since then I've no missed a week of training, and I've had a goal every day of my life since that day, whether it's lose weight, build muscle, do my Ironman. I'm now a personal trainer where I'm responsible for other people's health, so I've got that, but that gives me like fulfillment every day to help other people the way that I was helped, because I get counselling and I got a personal trainer, so I had somebody to talk to about the booze, about my dad dying. I had a personal trainer to help me with the training side of stuff to keep me accountable. And from the year I stopped drinking and my dad dying, I'd lost 5 stone. The day of my dad's anniversary, I'm dying, I'd done my first Olympic distance triathlon.
That's amazing.
And that is what kept me off the booze that first year. It was him, my wee sister, my family in general, and the gym, the exercise. It saved my life because it made me feel good. It made me feel proud of myself. It made me feel mentally amazing. And I had a goal. I had a massive goal every day to push towards, and then I still do it to this day. I train every day, and I coach other people, and I've done my first Ironman triathlon in Jolida, for my dad, for British Heart Foundation. 15.5 hours of swimming, cycling and running.
Oh my incredible god,
in Zurich, and raised $3,000.
How do you even prepare mentally for that, because that's tough going.
That's what people ask me a lot, and it comes back to booze and my dad dying so suddenly, because like when my dad died, I was quite young, but I had to grow up very quickly, because it's not that I was just young, I was a fucking like selfish, like I wasn't a bad person, but I wasn't reliable, and I wasn't
immature. You were young. Yeah, also immature as well.
Yeah, I was definitely. But when my dad died, and I was in a funeral director's planning my dad's funeral, and I was looking after my 12-year-old sister who's dealing with it, who's obviously a lot harder for her at that age to process stuff than me, a bit older. And then, you know, day's funeral, I'm carrying my own dad's coffin into a funeral parlour, you know, to bury him, and I'm standing watching my wee sister cry her eyes out because she's lost her dad, and that, you know, that sticks with you, you know. So anything, and through all that, I was battling my own fucking demons of wanting to drown my sorrows with booze, but knowing that I just couldn't do it, I couldn't let him down, I just could not fucking do it. So if they go as, oh look, I mean, it was hard, it was the triathlon, the Ironman was fucking brutal, right? It was so much fucking pain. I only beat the cutoff by 30 minutes, but none of the pain was anything as bad as those couple of months when my dad died, and me looking at my wee sister crying and carrying my dad's coffin into a funeral parlour at 25. Like, that, nothing's going to be as hard as that. So when things get hard, I just mentally, I'm just like, I'm doing something I enjoy here. Like, don't fucking moan about it. Just
it'll keep grind
going.
You, won't it?
Aye, but it makes me stronger. And that's why, like, I love it, because it makes me feel, because, like, getting out running for hours, for me, it's like time to reflect, it's time to like think about my relationship with my dad when I'm out running. And it's hard sometimes, because you think about the bad shit you've done, because like at the end of the day, like I've done a lot of good shit in the last 7 years, and I'm very proud of myself for all that stuff, but everything I've done, he's not seen, because he's not been here, and it's very hard to live with him only being here through the bad me, and it's quite hard to deal with, but I can think about that stuff a lot, but at the same time, you know, I'm out doing something positive, I'm not boozing anymore, I'm making him, but I'm doing that stuff for him, so he can see that, hopefully, and be proud of that, so it really helps me deal with shit. It's like, I don't take medication for like how I feel, but I train every day, and that is my medication for keeping my head right, because as soon as I stop, I can get very low, because I think about that bad stuff, and my regrets, you know, but I really stop these days, and that's what keeps me, that's why I'm alright, and I can deal with it, but that's why I got into long distance endurance stuff, because mentally it was just good, it was just great for me, it just helped me deal with my what happened, basically.
Like, for me, I had to, in order to stop drinking and stay stopped, I had to really start realising that the world is bigger than me and my problems, and that there's other people going through things that are much worse than mine, and they're not picking up a drink, so it's no longer an excuse, and finding a kind of, some people call it a higher power, like a kind of, you know, like the universe or fate or whatever you want to call it, karma, Buddha, you know, a lot of people take that kind of spiritual side into their life, and that helps a lot. And just with what you're saying, like, it kind of sounds like you've made your dad your higher power, and you're kind of like, you doing all of these good things is kind of, I guess, your way of making amends for a lot of that, because I've had to make amends to a lot of people in order to clear all that wreckage that I'd caused, so that not just so that other people can move on and not worry about me anymore.
Of course,
and because I put my mum through so much heartache. We didn't speak for 2 years through my own ego, my own like lack of self-esteem, that I just thought that I wasn't worthy of being her daughter, but at the same time, I wanted everything to be about me. You know, it was my problems, and it was just ridiculous, and it took speaking to other people and people giving me it straight and being like, you're really egotistical, but I'd never have associated that with myself, because I hated myself so much. But when it was explained to me that ego isn't that, it's actually just worrying about what everybody else is thinking, trying to please everyone, trying to be that fun person, like when you were saying earlier about your friends finding everything that you did funny, like I had that as well, and it was really dangerous, because I'd do things that were dangerous, that were wild, that hurt other people, but I would be able to tell that story in such a way that everybody would be killing themselves laughing, because I was the entertainer. But you know, when I'm sitting in the house absolutely dying over the memory of what I've done, they weren't there laughing with
me.
It's
painful, man.
It's and I got to that stage as well where I was in that limbo between, I don't want to die, but I don't want to live like this.
Yeah, of course.
But I don't know how to change it. So I was just spiritually fucked. I was dead inside completely. All the shine came out my eyes, and I was just, and like I put on weight, and I was just so, so unhappy with myself. And I'm still dealing with some of the the consequences of that. Like, I still have kind of back problems, and like, my skin's taken so long to clear because I was just putting so much shite into my body. But the fitness thing, like, that's really struck me because, like, alcoholism, it's the ism part that kind of fucks me. You know, it doesn't need to be alcohol. You can put anything in front of that. Like, it can be, it could be porn, sex, food. No matter what it is, I'll do it alcoholically. So like in my living room, I've got about a million skulls, and I never noticed it until I stopped drinking, and people were saying that you do everything alcoholically, and I'm like, holy shit, I've probably got over 100 of them, and I don't know why. But I've done the same with food, and like, I know that when my life is coming out of control, or things aren't right, oh, they both got a cat, when things aren't going to plan in my head and I'm trying to control everything. Hi.
Is that a cat?
Yes. No. But when I'm trying to control everything and things aren't going the way I want them to go, it starts coming out in how I eat. So I'll either not eat or I'll start binging on crap. So I've then had to, I got myself a coach who would send me what I've to eat every day, when I've to eat it, and a training program, which means that I don't go into the gym and spend 4 hours trying to go on every single machine because I'm doing it alcoholically. You know, I've got that cut-off point that lets me know you've done enough.
Yeah, totally.
And with the food as well, I've now got this marker of, because before when I was just eating what I wanted, when I wanted, I didn't have any marker of this is disordered. So now that I can, now that I know what I'm supposed to be eating, I can see where I'm going off track and I can go, right, I've got something I need to address here, whether I like, and I need to sit and think hard, like what's annoying me and what can I address? Because if I stop eating, that's not going to solve my problem.
Exactly.
So like I get the whole fitness and training thing because that's definitely been a thing that keeps me on track and lets me know if I'm, if things are out of sorts, even if I don't know it yet myself.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Like it can be hard. It can be the negative as well in my life because, especially like when I was doing that, like I chose to do an Ironman because I needed that maximum endurance push because I'd done an Olympic distance triathlon, I'd done a half Ironman, I needed that other one. But you know, it's so extreme that, you know, it really does impact your other areas of life. And my job is like, because I'm so into my job and I love what I do, I end up working quite a lot in late hours. And so basically when I was training for my Ironman from January to July, it was, my life was just consumed by training or working and friendships and family and you know, relationships are very hard for me to hold down. And then you start feeling guilty because, you know, I'm not spending time with other, you know, people in my life that matter, maybe should. And so then I'd done the Ironman and I was like, right, I need to fucking calm down because that was a really tough 6-7 months and it kind of negatively affected quite a lot of aspects of my life. And I got home and I stripped different back and I was fucking depressed, man. And I was like, fuck.
What did I do here?
So it was mentally tough because I needed that extremism in the training to make me, you know, to, or I was like too much time on my hands, too much time to think, just bored. And so I'm now back into training like a lot and sometimes 2 times a day and coaching a lot of hours. And so it's like, is that right either? You know, is that, for me, it's
finding
okay.
that balance in it. Like, it's hard to,
it's hard
to find.
Because balance is different for everyone.
Of course.
And what I found when I came home was like a balance of less training and more time, like normal time, wasn't good for me because I found myself fucking down, you know, struggling. So now I'm doing more and I'm busy all the time again. I'm okay because I'm like not stopping and thinking.
How's your, well, I can see how your life is different now, but what do you think is the biggest benefit to you being sober?
Fuck, man. There's too many. Like,
loads of benefits.
It's just everything. Like, as soon as I stopped drinking, I was a better person. Like, I was turning up to work on time. I was in my work. I wasn't just there. I was, like, in my work doing it. I was applying myself. I instantly got a different job because I didn't like the one I was doing for 5 years. I was doing it when I was drinking. I just done it because I couldn't be arsed fucking trying to get another one. As soon as I stopped drinking, I got another job. I started studying because I had time and energy and a new passion. I had money. I was able to go on holidays. I was losing weight. I was feeling better. I was fitting into better clothes. I was looking better. My skin was better. My hair was better. I didn't have a hangover. I didn't fucking hate myself. I wasn't depressed. I was working my way towards a new career, which like as a PT obviously would never have happened if I was continuing to drink. I now have a job that I'm self-employed that I love. I love going into work every day. I feel it makes me happy rather than makes me depressed.
Yes.
I don't let people down. Well, obviously you're always going to fucking let some people down in some aspects, but I'm not a let down anymore.
Yeah.
To my family especially. I'm not pished at family events, kind of ruin things or being an idiot. Everything in my life has improved since drinking. Everything, my mental health, for you know, especially because you know I live a happy life now.
Yeah.
And I have my moments, you know. Always, as I said, I always going to struggle to deal with my past and the things that happened with my dad, and I'm not being there anymore. But ultimately, I wake up and enjoy life now, and I have a future. I'm happy. I'm excited about it. I have goals, never ending goals, and I'm hopefully going to live longer and stuff. So, every single fucking aspect of my life improved. That's no exaggeration.
Oh, sorry, were you gonna?
When you were saying about the letdown thing, because I was always letting people down, like not turning up for things.
Yeah, of course.
And my sister, like, you're just like my dad.
Or late, hungover.
Or you turn up and you're no present.
Yeah, of course.
Like, I turned up for Christmas and my sister didn't speak to me for 4 months because I just wasn't in the room. I was there, but I was just a shell and I ruined it. I caused an atmosphere. And then when she said to me, you weren't fun at Christmas, I just lost it. I was like, you know, what about me? I was suffering during that time. And I drove all the way up there and I'd just fallen out with my boyfriend and you're expecting me to smile. And yeah, she's expecting me to smile because she's put on a massive dinner, cooked for everybody, you know. But I couldn't say no to anything when I was drinking, you know. Everything was a yes. But that was part of the reason why I kept letting people down. But I feel like now, I don't know about you, but I can say no to things and not feel guilty anymore because I know I'm saying no with a valid reason, not because I want to go and get pissed.
Well, I can say no to things all the time. I've got the energy after work to go and do things. And again, that's where it can kind of maybe be a negative thing because I work, like I start at 7:30 a.m. say, I'll coach till lunchtime, then I'll train, then I'll coach, then I'll train, then I'll coach. So it's 8 at night. And I'm meant to be meeting somebody to go to the cinema, and I'm like, sorry, man, I am fucked. And I'm up early again, so I'm going to go home and get to sleep because I value sleep so much these days. I need like 7-8 hours to function. So, you know, I do say no to things now.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not great because I maybe don't do enough out of work and training. But, you know, I've learned to prioritise myself in terms of what I need to do to keep myself right, and sometimes that is I say no to people or things. It's not a bad thing all the time.
Like if I don't prioritise my sobriety, everything else goes, so it has to come first.
Yeah, of course.
Something makes me feel uncomfortable and I don't want to do it, just no, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, when I first stopped drinking, I told myself I wouldn't be a person who never socialised and went out.
Yeah.
But the older I'm getting, like, I'm 32 now, and I just don't really enjoy, like, going out. It's not what makes me tick, you know? I like seeing my mates, obviously, and I like spending time with them. But, you know, a night out to them is probably exciting because they get to have a drink and let loose and get away for the week or whatever. But to me, it's just like, I need to go and watch people drink. When I'm not going to do it, but I want to. So where's the fun in that?
Yeah.
What sort of advice have you got for anybody who wants to or thinks that they may have a problem and they want to stop? If you've got
others, they're struggling.
Struggling.
People come and train. Not everyone. A lot of time come train just lose weight, but a lot of people come and train with me because they know I can potentially help them with that side of things. So I deal with helping folk in that sense quite a lot because they maybe see my story on my Instagram page and they think he's a good fit for me because I maybe do have an issue with booze and he can understand and empathise or whatever. So I do help people in real life with that kind of thing. And the biggest piece of advice is just, like, don't be ashamed to have a problem and ask for help or admit it, because that was the biggest thing for me, of like, especially to my dad or to my family, of admitting it. Because they'd always say to me, like, are you all right? Have you got a problem or is there something going on? And I'd just be like, I'm fine, like, it's just one crazy night or whatever. But people that really care about you and want the best for you are going to want to help you. I was very well supported when I was open about how I was feeling and what problems that I had. And if I never asked for help the day I did, would I even have stopped drinking? I don't know. I think it's a bit mental that all the years that I knew I should have stopped and I never, I stopped 2 months before my dad died. Like, that fucks my mind up, because I'm like, that's so lucky.
Yeah.
Because if I didn't that day and I was boozing when he died,
yeah, things would be very different.
Yeah, I don't know where I would be right now, and because I would have been drinking when I got told, because it was a Saturday afternoon. So I was very lucky, fate, whatever. It happened at the right time, and the biggest thing is asking for help. Don't be ashamed. Counselling helped me, because it was speaking to a stranger that didn't know me, didn't judge me, that I felt. Exercise is the best, in my opinion, the best thing for a healthy mind, and clear mindset, and to feel good about yourself. Too many people go to the gym for the wrong reasons, to get skinny, or you know, for aesthetic purposes, which is fine, but that's not the only reason exercise is there. I train on a daily basis for my head, and to keep myself right, and you know, feeling good and looking good is a byproduct of the life that I live. But even if you don't need to lose weight, or you're okay with how you look or whatever, exercise is there to get you stronger physically and mentally, you know. And when I was boozing and getting to work and feeling horrific, and then I was going to the gym and leaving feeling like fucking Superman, do you know what I mean? Like, that's a dramatic shift in mindset for me, and that's what it can do for people. And I see it on a daily basis with the people that I coach, the people that come with no confidence and don't believe in themselves, to then people that are like checking out their guns in the mirror. And like, finally, I see them changing, and it's a wonderful thing, you know. And it's all down to a good diet as well, definitely helps, because I think that the feelings that I felt through booze, people can definitely feel like that through eating junk food and takeaways and shite. So I think that, like, prioritising a good healthy diet is a major thing as well. And a coach can help, whether it's a counsellor, a group, or a gym coach, because, like, it might sound daft, but, like, a gym coach is going to keep you on track with your diet and your gym, which is a massive part of your mental health. So, yeah.
Great.
Amazing. Well, I've loved that. This has been amazing. Thank you so much for everything that you've shared. Like, that was, I've got a lot out of that, definitely. Everything you're saying about, like, exercise and fitness and stuff helping, like, it really does help me. And I used to chase the ripped look, you know, all the time. And that's all I wanted, and nothing else was good enough. And I was striving for perfection when I was forgetting about progress. And I've changed that mindset recently, just with this new coach that I've got. And he's just, like, I overate when I was on holiday, and he was like, it's cool, don't worry about the food, man. Like, just use that to build muscle, it's fine. And he didn't make me feel bad about it. He didn't go, we're going to need to give you, like, 2 ton of cardio, because, and then that's me punishing myself, kind of thing.
That's not sustainable.
But yeah, it was good, because I was talking about this earlier with Bruce about that kind of thing, and now I'm just happy to see a number go up on the weight plates rather than anything else. Like, I just want to get strong.
I
don't care really if that means eating pizza, I'll eat pizza. Fine.
I mean,
but I don't fret anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like, the whole world overeats when they go on holiday, so, like, it's just what happens. Like, you pay a lot of money to go and enjoy yourself on holiday, you're going to overindulge, it's just a fact. But you don't beat yourself about it, just come home and get back to normal.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I mean.
Well, so. This was amazing. Thanks so much for
not
coming
a problem.
In.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Do you have anything that you'd like to promote?
What's that?
Do you have anything that you'd like to promote?
Promote?
Yeah.
Well, I run a business which is gym and fitness based, but I do a lot. I do talk a lot about my problems that I had and how I overcame them, and talk to other people in similar situations. So I'm on Instagram as DC_fitness, on Facebook as DC Fitness. DC is my dad's name, Douglas Craig. So that's why.
You're
called Scott. Why that? So that's why. That's there. I've also got a podcast, and I've got a couple of cracking conversations with people that I've spoke to about similar things.
What's your podcast
today. Called? DC Fitness.
Right, okay.
So on iTunes DC and Catbox and Castbox and stuff.
DC _ fitness on Instagram.
That's
DC
Instagram.
Fitness on Facebook.
Yeah.
DC Fitness
podcast.
DC Fitness.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Excellent. I'm going to go listen to it.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. Thanks
a lot.
Thanks so much.